accession number 19587, Reel 2.
Peter Davey, Reel 2.
So, having travelled by train and alighted in Seoul, just as a rest, we had a break. And then we travelled further north by train. I cannot remember the name of the station that we alighted, but it was probably, from memory, 30 to 40 miles south of the 38th parallel. From there, we went by truck. So now we're nearing somewhere around the December the 15th, 18th, possibly. So we are now in convoy, quite a large, because there was a forwarding party that had gone, apparently, I was informed while we were at Brecon, that had gone on to do some preparations. The advance party. So we were now on our way to our battalion lines, which I believe in this particular instance we were some 40 to 50 miles away, in which we travelled by lorry. The weather had been quite rainy. And December was quite a bad month anyway, and the roads that had been cut out were not in any way the best roads, and were very narrow. Not only were they narrow, but they had been cut out of the hillside, and the drop to down into the valleys was a precarious journey. Viewing out of the back of the lorries, I noticed, unfortunately it was not us, that several lorries had gone off and injuries were occurred. And I'm not quite sure, but I believe there was a fatality in one of the lorries, where the lorry had gone over. We're now approaching what I now know to be the forward line, or rather the line in which the Welsh Regiment would now be defending. So we're at night, we're arriving at night, and we are now in a position where we have to alight from the trucks and get to the forward, or rather the battalion positions. My company, or rather my platoon, in which I was in, which was the 7th Platoon of C Company, well, 1st Battalion Welsh Regiment, unbeknown at that time and in that hour and the light that was available, we continued on down a gully and took over positions forward of the main battalion. It was rather frightening in the morning to wake up, or rather as light came to stand to and to view the North Korean, or no man's land, and the range of hills that came off of the valley below us. And this was to be my particular job of in front of the battalion. What we would have done, we were never attacked personally on this position, but there were seven fences of barbed wire in front of this position. And between the fences of barbed wire, There were drums of petrol, 45-gallon drums of petrol, with a wire leading to the slit trenches, which had a battery on, and in the event of an attack, we would put these terminals and put the wires on there, and the whole lot would go up. The imagination that one has when out on duty, you can make bushes and hedges move if you look at them. I used to count around the number of shrubs, and I believe I'm right in remembering there was something like about 22, and I would regularly count these out and make sure that there were no added ones. But if I stared long enough at them, I could make them move and the hairs would stand on the back of my neck thinking that we were being crept upon. That position was very, very exposed. The top of the hill could be seen by the surrounding Chinese forces. And at some point, one, don't matter how deep you dug your trench, you would still be shown against the skyline. The trenches were quite sturdy, as they had obviously not been built just recently. They had been built sometime by the previous battalions that had been there. The main trench petered out as it got towards the lee of the hill, in which we had a communal bunker. This communal bunker was something like about 12 or 15 foot square, that when we were not on stag, the platoon would meet. And obviously, being a Welsh regiment, there was many Welsh songs that were sung night after night, jokes that were told. It was quite a cozy place when you were inside, but you had to come out eventually and go to one's own bunker.
What were these songs?
The typical Welsh songs that everybody sings, and I never ever learned any Welsh, but most of the lads that I worked with were North Whelians, and they sang in Welsh. The boys from the Shires, as I previously mentioned, that most of the people that I joined up with came from Wiltshire, Hampshire, Berkshire, Dorset, and the Devons, tended to be put into platoons altogether from their localities. The Welsh tended again to be in sections, but that was not always the rule. It was probably felt at the time it was better that people had mates from their own localities. Funny thing about the Welsh side, as everyone knows, there's many Griffiths and Hughes and Jones. So when somebody was spoken to that was Jones, it was always their last ought to Jones or 7-5 Griffiths, because there were so many Welshmen of that particular surname. As with the Shires, it was more uncommon names.
So the songs were hymns?
Yes, yes, we sang hymns, and we sang Green Grow the Rushes Of, which was very popular because there were so many verses, and 10 green bottles standing on a wall. Communal songs that people could join in and know the words, and probably there was many Boy Scouts there that would sing these songs. And the Welsh, renowned for their singing. That was the it all happened in the communal bunker on the lee side. Now our own there was the fighting slits that were in front of the main trenches, and there was also our other bunkers, individual bunkers. There was a period in which torrential rain was on, and most of the bunkers were fairly sturdy. Being an ex-construction worker, I would eye these bunkers up because there was something like about 3 foot of earth over the top. And knowing that approximately a cubic yard of earth weighs a ton, that I knew over my particular bunker, I had something in the region of 4 tons. Very good for standing perhaps a mortar, but not so good when sodden with rain, because the weight increased to such an extent that in many cases the bunkers collapsed, because the roof timbers, if you were lucky, or angle irons, had not had sufficient bearing on the main walls, and consequently with the saturation of the earth they collapsed, and we did in actual fact lose one or two people killed through bunkers that would buried them alive. The bunker, the main trench that went round this position, was about 4 foot high. Now the bunkers that were leaning off so that people could stand up were deeper. Now in construction this was all wrong, because it allowed the rain to run from the main trenches into the bunkers that came off, consequently flooding the bunkers and causing subsidence. Personally, I had a stake underneath the roof, which I would look at to see if any movement had occurred between the underneath side of the bunker and the top of the stake. Fortunately, no movement had occurred. The particular bunker that I was in was constructed with very good load-bearing properties, but one disadvantage was that the poles, which had been obviously imported because there was no trees around there, had been laid crisscross. Now what this had done was formed cavities between the roll of the underneath pole and the other ones leading on the top. This gave marvellous access to the blue rats, and the rats would travel through these cavities to get to any food that we were likely to have. And I remember hearing these rats up above my head, because I constructed a bed, believe it or not, from Vickers machine gun belts and latticed them to give me a bit better sleeping. But I couldn't move the bed, but the bed was off the floor anyway, so I didn't get any water other than in my shoes, perhaps. And these rats were travelling over my head and came down when I was asleep. They woke me up and scarpered off. But I did have a matchet in which I pushed it up between the logs, and I must have stuck one because the blood came down on me. Not a particularly pleasant experience living in bunkers, because one could get trapped in there, and I did have one particular thing that I didn't want to get caught in the bunker with a phosphorus grenade, which was horrendous grenades. But I'd cut little pouches or little pockets out of the side of the bunker walls to put my wick burner in and to put any other stuff there. And obviously the temperatures whilst there, the hottest temperature that I actually recorded was 120 degrees in the shade. My lowest temperature that I had ever occurred was 25 to 30 below, whereby every half hour the moving parts of our rifles or any mechanical parts had to be operated because oil, even diesel, froze in the vehicles. So the moving parts, as your life depended on your personal weapon, you made damn sure that the moving parts did move and not get frozen up, as at any one time you could be called upon to use it. The day would start at stand two, which was, as every soldier knows, is the breaking of the morn, in which you would stand to for half an hour. The days involved mostly patrols. Each company and each platoon would take its turn at doing patrols. This war at that particular time had evolved into trench warfare. Chairman Mao, whose word was had gone out, had an opinion that prior to us getting there in 1950, that the masses would always overcome the mechanical troops. He learnt bitterly that the casualties that were inflicted upon the North Koreans or Chinese Republic, People's Republic Army, were horrendous, in as much that the waves of troops that were used, one would either run out of ammunition or the troops defending positions would either become subject to being shot or wounded, that the masses of Chinese troops would eventually overcome. But he thought differently after receiving so many casualties. And the war developed where he preferred to fight on his own ground. So the day-to-day of a soldier in this particular moment in time became fighting patrols, recce patrols, snatch patrols, and listening patrols. I've been on all these types of patrols, and whether it was I have encountered whereby a particular scenario is such. A hill that was named Baldy. In front of me, as looking through my OP post, all the hills in front of me, the other side of the valley, were called by hats. So, as an example, we would have had Top Hat, Bowler, Cap. Baldy was the hill which many fighting patrols went up, and Trilby. That's five hills that I can remember that I would, when at a later date I was on OP, but I could also see these were the hills that were directly in front of the 1st Battalion of the Welsh Regiment. Now, the fighting patrol meant that you had to go through the valley, and you would then enter a gully. On either side of the gully were bunkers, and we had to clear these bunkers. One man would be allocated to be a grenade man. His sole job was to load himself up with as many Mills grenades as possible, possibly, and also phosphorus grenades. His job was to go up and come over the back of the bunkers and lob a grenade into the bunker to clear it of any North Korean troops. Our ultimate goal would be to go up onto Hill 169, which we termed as Baldy, because Baldy had been pummeled so much by the artillery that there was not one blade of grass on there, hence its name. A section would be left down the gully to give covering fire whilst the other platoon or part of the platoon would go to the summit of Baldy and sit there all day. At night time, or rather coming towards night, they would come down. We would keep that open all day, that gully, and they would meet up with us, and then we would get back to our lines. Now, this would go on week after week until someone, North Koreans or ourselves, decided that we would either stay there the night or stay there all day. And that is when most of the fighting patrols actually turned into fighting patrols, obviously. But on the top of that bunker, there was presents left at Christmas time, because we are now into the time when we were in that forward, or I personally was in that forward position on Christmas Day, remembering where I was 12 months prior to that, on guard in Plymouth, in Crown Hill Barracks, Plymouth. So Christmas trees were left in the bunkers with leaflets and invitations to go over and join the Korean army or come out of the situation that we were in. So that was a sort of a fighting patrol. Then there was the listening patrol, whereby our CO, which was Lieutenant Colonel Dean, decided that there was no such thing as no man's land. That's my valley, and he would keep that valley open and patrol that all the time. The snatch patrol was to get hold of a North Korean soldier and bring him back for interrogation. Again, I had a situation whereby at this time we had our white suits on, because different times of the year our attire changed to the seasons of the year for obvious reasons. And I remember keeping a road open as I was a brain gunner and lying there waiting for this snatch patrol to come back. They didn't come back for some 4 to 5 hours. But in the meantime, I could not do any... there were Chinese patrols going by very closely, but we remained subdued. It went quiet, and the temperature was very, very low, and I felt my feet go numb. I felt my thighs going numb, my arms and trigger finger. I wanted to go to the toilet, and I just peed in my trousers. The water, the urine, went out. I didn't go to sleep. which I was fighting against going to sleep because I knew that I had to keep that open. And then I was I must have been drowsy, but the platoon commander was picking me up, saying, "Come on, soldier, get up." And he started shaking my arm. They obviously sent out another patrol because we hadn't been back. The other patrol that we were holding position for had arrived back around about 7 in the morning, and we were there about 11 o'clock at night. And there was a rum issue, but we had changed our position, and the NCO had left the rum bottle at the previous location. So therefore, we were unable to have any rum, even though it had been a slight sip. So here am I, frozen to the ground by my own pee, with a great big slab being picked up, with my arms being shaken, my legs being rubbed, and being handled a aluminium bottle flask of rum. And believe it or not, by the time I'd walked back to our lines, which was some 2 miles, I was inebriated with all the rest of the section. And that was the real naval rum. Nobody obviously took any notice of us being inebriated, but we were absolutely out of our head because they tried to get us working parts going. Fortunately, they never did snatch anybody, as they never saw troops. But what we would try to do in the case of a snatch party is to lie dormant, waiting for the last man to come and grab him and stifle his, take him back to our lines and be interrogated. And Major General Castles, who was the Commander-in-Chief of the United Nations Division, if my memory is correctly, put up an award of 7 days in Tokyo and a bottle of whiskey if you were successful in capturing a Korean soldier. So that was that little episode. There was another episode in which a woman came through the lines, and she was an informer or spy, whatever you like to call it. But she did, there was very little, all I can say was that a woman came through the battalion lines giving information on the positions of the Chinese on the other side. That's all I can presume. Other than that, I know little about, but there must be a story there somewhere as it actually happened. The other thing was quite frightening, in which everybody got a right rollicking from, that a North Korean soldier had come into our lines and had not been nobody had recognized that he was a North Korean soldier, because there was lots of porters that would assist us, and they were all named Kim. Everybody called him Kim, but they